This is Alex Pearson.
If we can get the positive side of this and move things forward, it will, you know that these people didn't lose their lives for nothing. If it makes a positive change that's nationwide, it'll be appreciated, I know, by families.
Alex Pearson with you on this Friday, March 31st, and we will talk about those Nova Scotia families because they are at the root of what is the latest failure of this country. Great to have you here on this Friday. It has been one of those weeks where we do have too much to talk about. It's been a crazy, crazy news week. Even today, I'm looking at the news, it just keeps breaking and breaking and breaking. So we'll be talking about it. We certainly have to talk about this Rogers deal because now they own my company. Big implications here. Big. So we will talk about them as we parse through some of the details. Also, just learning, as you heard in the news, Aaron O'Toole is stepping aside. I have a lot to say about Aaron O'Toole. I like Mr. O'Toole. I think he's a good guy. But we're going to talk about that because I think it's a loss to the party. And I don't know if I didn't see it coming or did. I'm not surprised. I'm sad to see him go, though. So we will get more details on that and talk about that. But I do want to talk about what we learned in this report Thursday, because I know it's a report that the government would love to go away, the RCMP would love to go away. And we have to talk about it because the report is it's disgusting what we learned, but not surprising. And, 22 people were murdered essentially because the RCMP didn't do its job. I mean, that's the dumbed down version of it. But, Brenda Luckey was a disaster as a commissioner. I mean, is anyone going to get held to account? Absolutely not a chance. Not in this country. In fact, a lot of the people involved in this utter gong show have either gone into other jobs in the police force or they're now into retirement. And that includes the former Commissioner Luckey, who retired days. I'm talking days, March 17th. She knew this report was coming. I mean, there's no way she was sticking around for what should be a well-deserved spanking. And, instead, she passed this flaming bag of dog poop off to her colleagues to deal with. And this is a report, which is about 3,000 pages, based off evidence from this 7-month inquiry. And it reveals, the force was completely unprepared to deal with this event. That for 13 hours, it was chaos and confusion. Police didn't know where to go. They didn't know who they were looking for. They didn't bother to issue an amber emergency alert, which deprived locals of a chance to protect themselves. And the confusion, as we all remember, lasted for hours, not just during it, but then after it. The families, the locals, all left in the dark for just hours. The report confirms police ignored witnesses telling them that the gunman was seen wearing a police uniform and driving a police car. I mean, they just ignored it. They ignored multiple warnings of the gunman's violent and illegal actions that locals had been bringing them and was well known apparently for years. I mean, they were condemned for failing to act on the known abuse of the gunman's longtime girlfriend, Lisa Banfield, who, of course, the shooter was hunting down to kill, and she was hiding in the woods. And instead, she ended up getting charged with a crime. And her lawyer read a letter on behalf of her for this report and doesn't really spare a lot of words.
What happened to Ms. Banfield, the way she was treated in the aftermath of this massacre, which began as an assault against her, is disgraceful. But this report is the first step to preventing that from ever happening again.
The report, it just goes on and on. It doesn't end with the failures of abandoning families of those killed, failure of supporting the families in the hours, days after, and then to cap it all off. I mean, as if we should be surprised, in the almost 3 years since those people were slaughtered, our national police force has done nothing. Nothing to fix anything. And neither Bill Blair or Marco Mendicino, no one bothered to ask them, hey guys, yeah, I'm making some changes. I know it's been 3 years, but getting around to it? No, nothing. Just sitting around. I mean, think about that. Brenda Luckey did nothing. She did nothing to fix what she and the others knew was broken. So she sat on her butt and did nothing to fix this very dysfunctional police force, which is supposed to protect our country's national security. I mean, this is who the prime minister hired to protect our nation. Like, they're tasked with investigating things like, oh, yeah, foreign interference, foreign threats. And, 22 people were killed that day. And it comes down to the incompetence and failed leadership of a commissioner who was clearly, I think, more worried about keeping her bosses happy instead of fixing the force. Because if you're not prepared as a national police force in the year of 2020, 2021, not to deal with this, when you know you had the guidelines and other attacks like the 2014 attack on Parliament Hill, you don't know. If you haven't got a plan in place for these big mass casualty events in 2021, then like why are you our national police force? It's insane to me. So they put all these recommendations out, you know, including telling the province of Nova Scotia, maybe you want to rethink your contract with this force of rural policing next time around. They've got to do basic training for communications, like there's a gunman loose, hide. You have to be trained to say that, apparently. 911 operators need to be trained so that they can communicate the danger to the front lines. That's always a good idea. And also to be able to tell those calling in, terrified, what to do. Of course, they need domestic abuse training because in 2023, they still don't know what to do. I mean, honestly, they missed all these signs of danger. People are bringing them. The other recommendation I got a chuckle out of was that the government should pass a law so that the ministers of public safety can't interfere with police investigations. In 2023, we need a new law to make sure that the politicians don't tell and interfere with the police to to push their agenda. Because remember, Bill Blair, who was then the safety minister, had denied these allegations that he was interfering in the investigation by pressuring Lucky to tell him about the guns that the killer used because they were trying to push this new gun law. And they both denied it. The report said there was no interference. But she screamed at her staff that she had to have the name of the gun. And then, and Justin Trudeau, he was there yesterday in Nova Scotia. And came out. This was his breathiest, most concerned thought. This is what he said.
We will take the time now to properly digest and understand the recommendations and the conclusions and the opportunities that the Commission has put forward for us to take up. There's no question there need to be changes, and there will be, but we will take the time to get those right.
Another 3 years? 4 years? Yeah, let's take your time. I mean, look, we shouldn't have to digest any of this incompetence. We've had no answers. We've had zero action to fix what everyone knew was broken. 22 people were killed in this country because of incompetence. Incompetence of Lucky, who was hired by that guy. So people should be fired. People should be held to account. And yet Lucky's off enjoying retirement somewhere. Other top brass have moved on, some promoted. The interim commissioner, who was talking to the media yesterday, hadn't even read the report yet. I mean, I've asked this a lot. Who gets held to account in this country? And why would we trust anybody? I mean, we've talked about this all week long. We talk about it a lot, of broken institutions, whether it's our court systems. You know, now it's the National Police Force, which, you know, supposed to protect us. And then, you know, we've been talking about, you know, bail issues. There are a lot of our government institutions that are really broken. If I'm a terrorist looking at this country, I'm going, what are we waiting for? They're a joke. They don't even try. We're just not prepared in any force, you know, kind of way. So we'll kick the conversation off with this because I think it's worth asking. Do you think the RCMP can be fixed or do they have to just completely implode it? And I'm not going to malign every officer on that force because there's some good ones, but this isn't the first problem. And you can't have a report saying that they know there are issues to fix, but they refuse to fix them. Like, maybe they can't fix them. Clearly they can't fix them. And I don't trust who will be appointed to run the show next because clearly it's so political.
Side of this and move things forward, it will, you know, you know that these people didn't lose their lives for nothing. It's gonna, if it makes a positive change that's nationwide, it'll be appreciated, I know, by families.
Certainly long overdue. That is one of the family members of the 22 people massacred in that Nova Scotia mass shooting. So they want changes. And they want the changes based off the seven-month inquiry, which released its findings on Thursday and spared no words for the RCMP, condemning them, saying the force was just completely unprepared to deal with mass casualty events. You know, they didn't know what to do or where to go. They didn't know who they were looking for, didn't issue an emergency alert, and ignored witness reports telling them the gunman's dressed as a cop and has a cop car. But they also ignored multiple warnings of the gunman's violence and illegal actions through the years, and ignored domestic issues brought forward about the girlfriend that he was hunting to kill that night and would go on to be charged. And to cap it all off, I mean, it's a 3,000-page report, but to cap it all off, and as if we should be surprised at all, in the almost 3 years since this mass shooting, the force, of course, has done next to nothing to fix anything, any of it, right? So let's bring in Paul Polanco, because he is one of the few investigative journalists left in this country. He has covered this trial, or this, inquiry, from day one and all of this. And he's also authored a book called 22 Murders, and has another one coming out on this particular crime. Good of you to join us, Paul.
Good. Good to be here again, Alex.
All right. So you listened to the report. You were there dealing with it. You might still be there today. But what were your findings? Were you surprised that it was as direct, or did you think it hit the right tone?
Well, yeah, in some ways it did. I was surprised, because if you went through the 76 days of hearings conducted last year, the commission basically skated around any controversy, didn't really press anyone on the RCMP, in the RCMP for evidence. Nobody was cross-examined. Police officers were allowed to testify together so they could support each other's story. And so there wasn't much hope that there'd be any criticism coming out. And I was sort of somewhat shocked that they actually nailed that part of it. Because, you know, Alex, back in May 2020, when I first started writing about it, the first piece I wrote in McLean's magazine was the Nova Scotia massacres reflects everything that's wrong with the RCMP. I went on from there, and a few weeks later wrote, it was an epic failure in policing. And I was called an armchair quarterback and didn't know what I was talking about, and da-da-da-da-da, just trying to sell newspapers. But I stuck to my guns, and they seem to have 100% supported the position I took.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to kind of parse through on this thing. It's 3,000 pages, but, you know, we should note that Brenda Luckey, who conveniently retired and walked out the door on the 17th of this month, you know, nowhere to be found. You know, she kind of just left this, poop sandwich and left it for her colleagues to deal with. And, like, what are they going to say? They got to wear this thing. But it's just, like, who's going to be held to account? I mean, she's on retirement. She doesn't have to show up or say anything. You know, others have been, promoted, but they haven't fixed anything in the years that have gone out. No one's done anything. And I'm just like, what is wrong with this country?
That's right. Nothing was done. And, you know, it's all fine and well for the commission to come along and create this sort of horrible picture of what the RCMP did. Because, you know, if you look at their point-by-point response, it's basically the RCMP didn't do this, didn't do that, failed at that, didn't do this, should have done that. There's not one thing where they say they did what they were supposed to do. And it's a long, long, you know, it's 130 recommendations. A lot of them have to do with those errors. But what has happened in the interim, even before the commission, was that the key people at the top of the RCMP, like Lee Bergerman, Janice Gray and others, were allowed to retire, were moved out, were promoted. In fact, Lee Bergerman, the head of the RCMP in Nova Scotia at the time, she was given essentially a 21-gun salute on her retirement by the Nova Scotia legislature for job well done. Yeah. So that tells you what the thinking inside was. And then the other thing before we get to this is all parties at the provincial and federal level made an agreement not to push this as an issue because they didn't want to ostensibly to upset the families. But really what it was to protect the RCMP. So you don't have the NDP, Conservatives or Liberals, asking any questions in the provincial legislature or the House about this, trying to dampen things down. And that's one of the reasons I went out of my way to write a book before the commission came out, laying out the evidence and describing this epic failure of policing. And it seems that they were at least felt compelled to confirm that.
So, yeah, I love that.
But there's no accountability.
No, of course not. There won't be unless there's civil action on that. And the prime minister goes out and gives his best sad face and sad concerned voice. And nothing will change. I mean, he'll think about this. I mean, the last person I want to rebuild the RCMP is this prime minister. Can it be rebuilt, though? I mean, look, they're going to look into this. I don't know if they're going to get any of these recommendations. And I don't know, Paul, if you can actually have faith. I mean, this is the force that's supposed to protect our national security. But right now, like, do you think I want them investigating Chinese interference? It is a gong show. But what do you do with this? Do you recreate it, rebuild it, just let the politicians figure it out and the top-level brass, rebuild?
Well, traditionally what they do, and Mr. Trudeau has done, I mean, I was face-to-face with him yesterday, and you're right, he was glum-looking. He looked like he didn't want to be there.
Oh, of course not. Well, hold on, Paul, because after that he went out to play some music. He was on the stage with a great big C with a party of Seamus O'Regan there singing along with Santa. Like, of course he didn't want to be there. He wanted to be at a party with Seamus O'Regan, but I digress.
Yeah, I mean, I was doing a radio report. I stepped outside the hall to do a radio report in Halifax, and Mr. Trudeau came walking out right towards me, and he was looking at me. I was looking at him, and I think I thought to myself as I was talking, I said, I think he knows who I am, because he waved, didn't smile. He just had that frown on his face. And we sort of glanced at each other, and he passed by to go to the press conference. But getting back to your point, Mr. Trudeau says, I'm going to look for the perfect person to run the RCMP. And he emphasized perfect. What this means is he's looking for someone, and he said this, with an Indigenous background, if that's going to fix it. As if that's going to fix it. The problem is that you have a vehicle, the analogy is you have a vehicle that is basically falling apart, is not roadworthy. And it doesn't matter if you put Emerson Fittipaldi in the driver's seat, they're not going to make it work. So the way to do this, the way to fix it, is essentially what the commission says and previous reports have said. The force has to be torn down.
Yeah.
Taken out of contract policing in the provinces outside of Ontario and Quebec, where they're essentially rent-a-cops to the provinces with no accountability. And an aside on that is, all of that's paid for and subsidized by the Ontario and Quebec taxpayers. Why are they paying for provincial and municipal policing in the provinces outside of Ontario and Quebec? And they have their own issues to deal with. And why aren't those provinces paying for their own policing and being accountable for it, and holding those police accountable? It's a big issue. But
massive.
None of that is getting done. And then the last part is, like, if you take the RCMP out of those and make it a federal police force, then they can set up their own provincial and regional police forces in those provinces. And then you have other forces set up that we desperately need to investigate cyber crime and massive fraud and national security. The RCMP does all that stuff and does it all badly.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's the big thing. I mean, who's going to look into the Chinese interference? Like, we just don't have it. All the systems are broken. So I really kind of am only half joking when I say, after you finish this, because I know you've got another book you're going to be writing on this, I think you need to start doing the Chinese interference, because there are so few of you who actually know the systems, know where to find anything, and can kind of hold the curtain back on the wizard.
But Alex, I wrote about this in my book in 2008, devoted two whole chapters explaining the Chinese interference at the time. Some of the same parties involved today were involved then. I was labeled a conspiracy theorist for bringing it up. We talked about this before. And, I could show that then Prime Minister John Chrétien's son-in-law was running a giant project for Power Corporation, the Three Gorges Dam in China, as one of the reasons why there was no investigation of what was going on then. And, I was poo-pooed for, you're not supposed to raise this. This is Canada. You're not supposed to say things like that about our leaders.
Yeah.
And there were facts. And that's what happens right across the media.
Yeah, well, nonetheless, we've got some big problems, and it's, I think, really frightening to a lot of people that they won't get solved. Paul, we will talk again. I appreciate your time on this. I know you've been pretty busy, but I always appreciate your outlook and certainly
your expertise. Well, anytime on any of these issues, because, you know, the last point, I mean, if you look at one of the things in this report, why I sort of half-hearted look at this report in spite of all the headlines, at the end of the day, the commission sort of reveals its real what it's really doing. And it says all policing in Canada should be brought under one sort of roof.
Umbrella.
And one umbrella. And who should run it? The RCMP.
No.
Should be training all policemen.
No.
This commission miss.
Yeah, no. Ay, ay, ay. Well, we'll talk again, Paul, but certainly appreciate it. Thank you.
No problem, Alex. Thanks. Bye.
That's Paul Pelango. He wrote the first book on this called 22 Murders. He's going to be writing another book on it because they asked him for one. But there you go. You've got the goods. We'll see what comes out of it other than nothing. There's a bunch of big stories happening. The other thing that happened and it got kind of ignored is that the censorship bill C-11, now about a week away from becoming law because the government shut down debate on this thing last night. They're not going to amend anything. So we'll talk about what this means. Can't say you weren't warned. I've talked about it for a few years now on this show, and we'll talk about the implications. Michael Geist on the other side of this break here on 640 Toronto. Important, and we've been talking about it for a long, long time on this show, and now it is very close to being a reality. The censorship bill, C-11, now in final stages of becoming a law, so we're talking like a couple of weeks, maybe even sooner. This is going to be one of the most consequential laws we see passed in this country, because while it's going to be spun as protecting Canadian content and regulating streaming platforms, the reality is it is giving the government control of what you see, what you post, what I post, or won't be posting anymore. And look, this is a bill that went through record amount of debate in the Senate, and there were record numbers of witnesses in the industry. The Trudeau government, pushed back against that, and they shut down the debate on Thursday, rejecting all of the Senate recommendations, including one to protect content that we post online from regulation. So let me bring in the man who has been waving the most flags on this. He is Michael Geist, law professor over at U of Ottawa. And knows all things in internet and e-commerce law. Great to have you, Michael.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
You have spent so much time covering this and putting this out there, and it's coming. What are we looking at now? Like, this got to go back to the Senate, but the bill as is is, I think, a terrible, one of the worst laws we've seen in this country. Am I being too harsh?
Well, I think it's enormously problematic. I must admit, I think some of the characterizations that we've seen are exaggerated. You know, this isn't China. This is not North Korea. But it does have the potential to impact our ability to be heard. I think we get to post what we want to post. And there isn't, I don't think there are implications in that regard. But part of expression is the ability to be heard. And the fact that this legislation does still give the CRTC the power to treat content, posts on YouTube videos, TikTok videos, mm-hmm. these kinds of things are all treated as programs that can be subject to certain regulations. That is still in the bill. You know, the Senate was convinced that that was still in the bill and that there was a need for a fix. And I think discouragingly, it went back to the House, as you've said. The government took a look at that amendment, an amendment that I have to say still met the objectives of the government. And they said, no, we're going to reject that. And so you're right. It now does head back to the Senate for their approval of a bill that does adopt some of the Senate amendments, but the most important one lies on the scrap heap.
All right. And so how long does it take then for this to come into play? Because obviously the CRTC, which governs what I do and what media does and what you watch and stuff, how long will this take before it actually comes in?
Yeah, I think we're still looking at a pretty long road. You know, so the next immediate step is for Senate approval. They're off for a couple of weeks, so we're looking at mid-April, but it'll go back there. And I think the expectation is that, notwithstanding the fact that the Senate did approve the changes. The government rejected some of those changes that in all likelihood, the Senate will still accept the bill as it is now and basically admit defeat, so to speak, with respect to their proposed amendment. The next step would actually be the government putting forward a policy direction to the CRTC. So they've tried to suggest, you know, don't worry about some of your concerns. We're going to direct the CRTC about what our key priorities are. That's going to take a little bit of time. Then the CRTC gets involved. So nobody's seeing any big money or any big changes, frankly, for quite a period of time.
Well, that is good news. I mean, Pierre Poilievre says he'll toss this thing out, but once it's, I guess, passed by the Senate, we'll start to see kind of some motion with the CRTC. What is it in your mind? Because they push back a lot. I mean, there were times during the testimony in the Senate where witnesses said they were being bullied by liberal MPs trying to push this through. But why are they pushing this through and so desperate to get this through so fast without debate?
Well, you know, I think the big question really is, why are they choosing to reject the Senate amendment, quite frankly? You know, right. I mean, we have a reasonable discussion as to how much is an appropriate debate and the like. I think when you're in opposition, you don't like governments cutting off debate. And so we've, you know, back when it was the Harper years, liberals didn't like it. Yeah. Now the shoe's on the other foot. But the most important question really is, you know, the Senate took on board both the evidence that they heard that there was an issue here and the government stated objectives about what they wanted to include and created what they've described as a surgical amendment, one that ensures that the government's key priorities are still in place, but that there are some greater safeguards for the potential regulation of user content. And the fact that that was rejected, and frankly, the reasons that have been given are all over the place. Some basically suggest, well, they want the power in the future potentially to regulate. Others say these are loopholes, which is just plainly false. Others say, oh, there's nothing to see here. In fact, it's not regulated. But that's simply just not the independent expert view on where things are at. And so I think the big question is, you know, why on earth, if you were given a nice off-ramp that still allowed you to meet your objectives, did you continue to insist that no, we're going to go ahead and maintain these powers? And I fear that the answer isn't one that's going to leave anybody with much comfort, because it does suggest that the goal is to maintain some of these powers in the legislation, perhaps not to exercise them today or tomorrow, but they want to have those powers in place.
Yeah, and if it's the government you like today, you might be fine with it. It's when it's a government you don't like tomorrow that you have to worry about. So, all right, well, look, you've done a ton of work on this. I know you're still working on other stuff, so I appreciate your time on this.
Oh, thanks again for having me.
That's Michael Geist, professor of law over at U of Ottawa, but also probably one of the smartest minds when it comes to internet and e-commerce law. So that is coming. It is going to be consequential. I'm glad to hear someone was saying it was like a week or 2 weeks that it would get motion. And then then it has to go to the CRTC to figure out how they're going to do it. But I'm glad to see we've got a bit of time for this to happen. But I don't care what government you are. I just don't want anyone telling anybody what they can and cannot post. And then don't forget there's Bill C-18, which is the update to the Broadcast Act. And it's no better. It's no better. You know, they're already fighting with Facebook and Google and all the rest of it, but it is no better, certainly not for my business. Nonetheless, it's been a busy day, busy week. It's going to be busy from here on out. Don't forget, Monday we'll be down live, City Hall. We'll see what that day brings us. I hope you have a terrific week and get a chance to kind of relax and check out and just live a little. Thank you to Heather Burton. Thank you to Corey Manuel. I'm Alex Pearson. Thank you so much for spending some time with me. Back on Monday with you. This is 640 Toronto.
I'm not just a pawn in this game.
3 nights a week on Global.
They're putting targets on their back. Massive.
Drama.
I guess you could say I'm in a showman.
They're just so in love and so annoying. Enough.
Betrayal.
The guy just put up his best friend now.
And plot twists.
What is happening right now?
You'll never see coming.
If you're coming for me,
this is perfect.
I'm coming for you then.
It'll be a battle.
Like, it'll be war.
Big Brother Canada. All new Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Sundays on Global. Stream on Stack TV.